Welcome to Paradigm Shifters, and my guest today is Colleen Morrow. And oh my gosh, Colleen has written the most amazing book about the spirituality of telepathy. Is that right?
Yep.
And one of the things I absolutely love about this book is that you've taken us through layer after layer of frequency consciousness and how humanity has moved through changes and adapted to potentials and so on for hundreds of thousands of years, if not millions, right? And brought us up to today, and the shift is how I'm understanding it. Would you agree with that? And welcome
Absolutely.
To the show, Colleen.
Thank you.
It's really exciting for me. I'm just over the moon about it all. And I think when you explained at the beginning, and I know you've done tremendous research, when you explained how they talk about these, what are they, etheric beings that mm-hmm. were kind of the beginning force of humanity's movement through life. I just loved that, because by the end of it all, we're talking about another level of etheric being, are we not?
That's right. That's right. It's an evolutionary journey, and it was very interesting to research all this and understand that we're just about to make another leap.
We want that leap. But I read somewhere it said 438 years or something. Is that right?
No, I think it's ongoing now. I mean, they talk about this fifth stage that we're in, and we're just about to move into the sixth stage. And they don't end in a really finite way. One sort of mixes into the other. So we're sort of gently moving into this new phase where we have increased telepathic experiences.
Yeah, well, I really love that part. It's really exciting. So before we get into those details, which I find irresistible, of course, let's tell people about who you are, that you used to have a magazine called Intuition. So obviously you've had an interest in this kind of thing for quite a while. And now you've taken it to a very deep and complex place, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to tell a story about how the magazine got started, because it's such a good illustration of the experience that I'm writing about now. I had always been interested in the spiritual world and intuitive studies. And in the late 80s, I was living in San Francisco, and I had worked for several alternative magazines. And I suddenly found myself without a job, and I was trying to figure out what to do. I had already worked for all the magazines I liked, so I was a little bit stumped and not sure what the next step would be. And I was kind of frenetic and frantic about the fact that I was running out of money. And I spent my days looking for new magazines, talking to editors, and checking my bank account every day and worrying about it. And one morning, I was driving myself crazy. And one morning, I woke up and I decided, okay, I'm going to give myself a mental health day. I'm going to spend one 24-hour period just doing something nice for myself. I'm not going to think about the fact that I'm unemployed and running out of money. And it was October. That's my favorite month in San Francisco. Love to be outside. And I went out and bought some bulbs, and I decided that I would just putter around in my garden for the day. And it was a lovely day, and I was really enjoying it. And I was just puttering around when I had a kind of intuitive experience that I'd never had before. A thought just flashed through my mind. And the thought was the Center for Applied Intuition. And I was always an intuitive person, but I always accessed an intuition through feelings or some sort of body-based sensation, like a queasy stomach. But this was a purely mental experience. The words seemed to have been dropped directly into my brain. And I immediately knew that it wasn't my thought, and it made absolutely no logical sense. I knew about the center, and I had met Bill Kautz, the founder. But I couldn't imagine why I would go there if I was looking for a magazine job. He had a tiny two-room office, and he ran intuition trainings, and he sent intuitives out to do business consulting. It didn't make any sense. The only thing that seemed logical and possible there was some sort of administrative position that I wasn't interested in. So I mulled it over for a few days, and I thought, well, what have I got to lose? And I called him up, and I asked him to send me information about the center's activities. And I got a big manila envelope a few days later. When I dumped it out, there were several brochures and a very simple typewritten journal called Applied Psi. Hmm. And this was the quarterly publication that he sent out to his centers. I think they had 200 members. And it was all about the subjects of intuition and creativity. So I was looking through it, and I suddenly had an idea. I thought, boy, this is really interesting. This could be a real magazine. I think people way beyond the center's small membership would be interested in this. So I called him up and asked him if I could come and meet with him. And when I did, I explained my idea. And he just lit up and said that he had always dreamed of turning it into a real magazine, but the right person had never come along. So I went home and created a proposal, came back the next day, and I suddenly found myself launching a new magazine. We called it Intuition, a magazine for the higher potential of the mind.
Wow.
And yeah, I got 2 issues out before Bill closed the center, and he signed the rights to the magazine over to me. And I later got a grant and set up an office. And when I think about this story now, there's several interesting things. One, I never would have gotten there through rational process. It never would have occurred to me to look him up if I was looking for a magazine job. I got something better than what I was looking for. And I couldn't have seen that in the next decade, there would be a flood of information on this subject, and the magazine provided a focal point.
Hmm.
And I ran the magazine till about 2000, I think. And then I started to study the Ageless Wisdom teachings. And I was immediately intrigued by the subject of spiritual telepathy. And I realized that this was the next step. It was a more advanced level of the work that I had done with the magazine. And so that started a 10-year journey of studying this subject and thinking about how to best present it to people. Because the source material is so esoteric, I wanted it to be read by a group much wider than those that were already reading esoteric books. So I looked to see what parallels there were to this teaching in other traditions and found that it was absolutely everywhere, that this is actually a universal teaching that lies at the heart of all of our great religious traditions.
Wow. And that's something that's really important at this time on the planet.
I think so, too. Yeah. And also our pioneering scientists like Dean Radin and Rupert Sheldrake are coming to the same conclusions. So I wove all of this together, and it took years and years because I didn't have a background in world religions or quantum science that I really had to hit the books and study all this. But I was really propelled forward by this feeling that it was important, that this was something that people really needed. It really inspired me very deeply. And I figured if it inspired me, it would inspire other people.
Well, tell me this. It was your own intuition growing like mad throughout this. Was it like high-speed trading wheels for
it
you
was.
Personally?
One of the things that I did is I decided to join an esoteric school. So I would have the step-by-step training under my belt. And so I could describe that to others. So I became a student in the Arcane School. And that's a multi-year esoteric training program. It lasts anywhere from 8 years to 14 years, depending on how fast you're going. Lately, I have.
When did it begin? Was it like before the turn of the 1900s?
This particular training?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was set up in 1920s.
Okay. That's what Blavatsky and all those people?
Yeah, Alice Bailey. It's actually from Lucis Trust. Mm. So it was a good step-by-step program for me, and I understood how they take people very slowly and build, you know, on each level. So what I did is I translated that. It's again, in very esoteric language, and I translated it and wove it together with all these other things that I was learning.
How interesting. Was it so fascinating for you, was it?
It was absolutely fascinating.
And how long did it take you to get to a place where you could put a book out?
Oh, the whole thing took about 10 years. And it's never smart financially to put that kind of time into a book because I didn't work much. You know, I just worked the minimum that I could get away with. And then I spent the rest of my time studying this. But I somehow just felt that it would work out, that it was something that I was supposed to do. And I found that to be true with the magazine, too. When I had to start raising money for it, everyone, including my own mother, thought it was kind of a crazy idea and I would never get it funded. And I did. Somehow I felt that feeling that this is something I'm supposed to do and I just need to keep at it. And I did in the most remarkable way possible. It got funded and it went out into the world. So I had that same feeling that this was time well spent, that I could do other things with the information, that somehow it would come back to me. And I'm finding that happening.
Well, let's jump into the title of your book, Spiritual Telepathy, because when you heard that suggestion in your mind, absolutely not looking for it, not asking for it or anything, do you think that's a really good example of a higher level spiritual telepathic suggestion or recommendation?
Absolutely. And that's why I like to tell the story. And, you know, we wonder where it came from and we don't know. And I don't think it's really important that we know. Mm-hmm. It could have come from the soul or mm-hmm. It could have come from even higher levels. It's said that there are higher beings that guide the evolution of the planet. and that they can't physically affect life on Earth. So they look for those of us who have this connection between the soul and the brain, and they can actually throw down information that then registers in our brain. And that was the experience I had, where something was dropped into my brain and I knew that it wasn't my thought. And so I think that, you know, certain people are seeded with ideas, that they also seed many people with ideas and seed humanity as a whole with ideas.
That can be many people will have the same idea at times,
exactly.
Right?
In fact, I know one other person who was thinking about it at the same time. And, you know, when I laugh and think about the fact that I was a good candidate because, number one, I had the interest and experience to start a magazine. And two, I was certainly available since I was completely unemployed. So I could just jump on it. And I did.
But also vibrationally, does that mean you were ready? I mean, how does that work for a lot of us who have to seek, what is it, the connection between the soul and the higher levels?
Well, here's what's interesting, is that it can happen spontaneously, which is what happened to me. But we can also cultivate the ability to access the soul and the higher worlds at will. And that's what's so fascinating to me about this subject. We don't have to stand around and hope and pray that we'll get another download, that we can actually train ourselves so we can access that information, that higher level of information, whenever we want. And that's considered the high prize, so to speak, of esoteric training, to become sensitive to the subtle worlds to the point where we can live in that world.
Yeah,
we
even if it's Don Juan or people like that, that's part
right.
of the deal, isn't it?
That's right.
Do you think some people are naturally acclimated to that just from the vibrational, their own personal vibrational nature or imprint?
Well, it's said that we come into each lifetime with the skills and abilities we've developed in the past, and that we're all walking down the same road. The only difference is what section of the road we're walking down. So I think some people have developed that already, and others are working on it. So.
And did you explore that concept for yourself?
Yeah, I felt like I was ready to do it. And I think that when we're motivated, it's when we're ready to do it. There's an esoteric belief that you shouldn't do it if you're not ready. And in fact, in the ancient world, only certain people were allowed to have access to this teaching because it was thought to be detrimental if you weren't ready. And now it's available to the public. I think that we have evolved as a species enough where we can handle this kind of higher vibration. And if you're motivated, you're ready.
And talking about higher vibration, that is kind of a symptom of this period of shift, is it not?
That's right. That's right.
And it's not just personally that some people have it personally more than others. I know that. But I think on the planet, wouldn't you say that there is a higher vibration available all across the planet more than ever before?
That is. I think that's absolutely true, that there are higher levels of energy being sent to humanity as a whole to really motivate us and to sort of lift us to this point where we can start to do this work.
And of course, we're living in a tremendous ferment. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And one of the things you said in your book was that is actually meant to stimulate or to challenge us to awaken and to, you didn't use the word awaken, but that's kind of popular these days. But it is to challenge us to lift above many of the old, what did you call it? The part of us that is run by our emotions,
right.
The emotional body, is kind of to infuse that with a higher intentional frequency, is it not?
That's right. Barbara Marx Hubbard talks about this a lot, and so does Eckhart Tolle. Barbara says that those of us on Earth today are the crossover generation, that we're responsible for leading the way from one stage of our species evolution to the next. And Eckhart Tolle, in his book, A New Earth, talked about it too, but in more stark terms. He says that as a species, we have the choice to evolve or die now, that we're really faced with this sort of do or die period. And they both say that as a species, that evolution happens as a result of some sort of crisis that propels us or forces us to make a leap forward. And Tolle talks about, he uses the example of an amphibian who's forced to develop the ability to live on land after its habitat dries up. And we're faced with that choice now. Our own habitat is in trouble. We have terrorists that are looking for nukes. we're really sort of at that point where we have to shift into a higher state of consciousness.
Now, Colleen, I want to ask you something about that, which is, do we all collectively, do we have to get to the 100th monkey collective consciousness in order to make the shift, or do we all die, or will some of us, I think it totally was one who said that we would separate, there would be more than one reality or more than one world.
I didn't see that in anything I read. But what I do know is that when we make conscious contact with the soul, and that's what the book is about, that everything changes. We lose our sense of separateness. And that's when we realize that we're interconnected with everyone and everything, that we're part of one great universal life, which is the soul of humanity. And when that happens, war becomes obsolete. And so that's what we're being pushed towards. And I think that that's really the only solution to some of the messes that we're in. The mess in the Middle East doesn't seem to be able to be solved by anything else other than this kind of shift in consciousness.
Or what we've done to the planet as well, hey?
That's right. That's right. We're connected not only with everyone and everything, but the planet itself.
Well, also, you spoke about having some like financial anxiety and so on that led to you're kind of working in the garden and kind of trying to relax yourself. The financial anxiety all over the world is as big an expression of what's going on as anything, isn't it? I keep thinking and looking through your book, I'm going, wow, I think we're going to evolve to find love more important than money. Or do you think, what do you think?
No, I think that's absolutely true. And one thing that was interesting about this story is that the information I needed was there, but I couldn't tap into it when I was so frantic and, you know, and calling editors and looking for magazines. It was only when I went offline, so to speak, and I gave myself that quiet period where I stopped worrying and, you know, I just was in the moment, enjoying the day.
And you're in the dirt.
That's right. That's when the moment, that's when the information came, when I was quiet, when I quieted myself down.
It's just so fascinating. So a lot of people are doing yoga these days, aren't they? And a lot of people are meditating. So why don't you talk a little bit about some of your wisdom about meditation, conscious meditation, active meditation, whatever it is you have studied to make such huge connections. Oh, I wanted to ask you, too, about connecting to the soul. Is that the same question, or do you have a way of expressing that one separately?
No, it is the same question.
Okay.
And what I brought out in the book was that there's actually three types of telepathy. There's instinctive telepathy, which is a feeling-based telepathy. There is mental telepathy, which is mind-to-mind. And then the highest is spiritual telepathy.
And instinctive is what we all did as primitive beings, right?
Right. And we still have that ability that we all have. Each of these types of telepathy, although we're developing the spiritual now. And it sort of shows the progression of our perceptual abilities. You might think about it as body, mind, spirit, that this kind of instinctive knowing was really important in the early days, in the caveman days, to help a caveman sense danger and where to hunt and so on. And then the rational knowing is what we focused on now. And that the next frontier, the next step is this pure intuitive knowing. And that's where we're at right now, at that doorway. And we developed this type of telepathic perception by a type of mind training called creative meditation or Raja Yoga meditation. And again, in the ancient world, only certain people had access to this type of training. And today it's available to everyone. There's a basic practice, and I have three successive meditations in the book. In the beginning, it takes only 10 to 15 minutes a day, and we're first learning to concentrate and hold our focus of attention on what we call a seed thought, which is a word or sentence.
Okay, and like a mantra sort of thing.
Kind of, yeah. This allows us to get control of the mind so we can focus our attention where we want it to go. It becomes our servant rather than our master. We're training the mind to be a tool that we can use to access the higher world. And when we focus on seed thoughts, we're also looking at the deeper meaning behind each sentence or word. And that helps us to train the mind to think more abstractly. And that better matches the vibration of the higher world. So we first do that kind of mind training. And in the next phase, we focus our attention upward to the soul. And we visualize the soul as a star about 6 inches above our head. And when we do this day after day, we anchor small threads of energy that will eventually form a symbolic or energetic bridge between the mind, the brain, and the soul. And this bridge is called the Rainbow Bridge, or the Bridge of Light in the Wisdom Teachings. I found it in the Hindu text. It's called the Antahkarana. It's even in the Bible. It's called the Straight or Narrow Gate in the New Testament. And every culture seems to have this idea that there's a bridge that connects the physical and spiritual worlds, and that there's different techniques to build this bridge.
Well, when we go back to soul just for a moment before we get to the bigger picture, the soul is full of, as you said, that wherever we've been, whatever we've learned is recorded in the soul, right?
That's right.
Talk a bit about karma. Like, what, for a lot of people, that means like, oh, darn, all the old stuff I've done is sitting there. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, the soul is the repository of all of our many lifetimes of experience.
Right.
And that's why it is really a kind of higher type of intuition, that our personal intuition gives us information about our day-to-day lives, our relationships, our work, and so on. But the soul knows the higher purpose and can help us understand the bigger picture. It's really a divine partner, and it's our most reliable and highest source of guidance and direction. And I'm sure that we all have karma to work off. And when we're connected to the soul, we have that understanding of the bigger picture of what our lives are about.
Okay. So that could include the good and the bad karma, or whatever you
absolutely
want to call it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't escape. We don't escape.
But we can. Is this not so that we can, through understanding it or being with it and knowing it, can we not transcend the level at which we would respond to it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's one practice in the book, and it comes under a chapter called Refining the Emotional, Mental, and Physical Body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's considered to be the first step in esoteric training, because if to actually access information, there has to be a direct line of communication, again, between the soul, the mind, and the brain. And to do this, we need to quiet the minds and emotion and purify the physical body. Because if we're ill, if we're tired, and especially if we have mental or emotional static, it'll be hard for the brain to register these subtle currents of thought. Any kind of chaos will actually repel these subtle thoughts. And I've discovered that refinement practices are part of all spiritual traditions. I had a really hard time with this.
And oh, did you? Okay.
Absolutely. And I talked about this in the book, because I figure if this is true for me, it's true for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is one of the ways, or one of the reasons, that we stumble and have so much trouble getting control of the mind. And because we have so much emotional turmoil.
Right.
And Jack
and judgment. And
that's
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jack Kornfield talked about this. He said that when he first started to teach meditation, he found that at least half of his students were unable to master even the basic concentration exercises because they had so much unresolved emotional issues. And when you get quiet, they start to bubble up. And even though I had done a lot of therapeutic work in my life, what I discovered is that I still was walking around with a lot of anger and resentment. There were a lot of people I still needed to forgive, and a lot of it was really, really old. And that there's a difference between getting over something and making your peace with it, and really forgiving the people that hurt you or betray you. And so I still had this sort of lump, you know, sitting there. And as the quieter you get, the easier it is for that old stuff to bubble up. So I got so frustrated, I actually started working with a spiritual healer by the name of Stephen Lumiere. And he was wonderful, and he helped me a lot. He gave me a prescription, so to speak, of three meditations to do every day.
Oh.
One was on compassion. Mm-hmm. One was on loving kindness, and one was a great forgiveness exercise that I put into the book. And I did this every day religiously, and I started to calm down. I did become more forgiving. I became more tolerant. And it was really at that point that I was able to meditate deeply. So I have all these meditations in the book, and I have two additional practices. And one of them is called rewinding your day. It's like looking at what happens each day. You sort of rewind it from the most current event to the earliest. And you just do this day by day. And the reason I brought this up is because it relates to karma. When you do this, you can very easily see the laws of cause and effect at work in your life.
Mm.
You can see that, oh, I gossiped about this person, and then I got gossiped about. You know, you can see what's happening in your life and how what you do comes back to you very quickly. And so you start to change your behavior. You really start to self-correct after a while, and you see, you know, what the repercussions are for you to behave in a certain way.
That's quite a long process, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I also think that more and more people are paying attention to that kind of thing. So maybe that's what we need for critical mass to shift this entire species of ours, right?
That's right. It says that each of us who make this contact with a soul make it easier for those who follow. So it is this critical mass. It's sort of this energetic process that happens that makes the doorway wider and makes it easier for people. When you think about the past, there were only certain very special people that seemed to have contact with the higher worlds. And I've always wondered about this because I've always been very touched when reading about Joan of Arc, for example, who talked to saints and angels. Mm-hmm. I think I saw every movie that was ever made about her, even made for TV ones. Mm-hmm. And I always find myself kind of tearing up, and it creates this longing, like, well, why does this happen only to some people? I'd like to have this experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wonder, why? Are these people more evolved than the rest of us? Or is it somehow preordained that they'll have this special gift? And that was one of the things that was so exciting to me about this work, is that it became clear that this is possible for all of us, that it is, in fact, our evolutionary destiny. And that there's a training, there's a way that we can make contact with the higher worlds and have these experiences. It's not just for special people. In the past, there were only a limited number of people that could do it. But now, as I said, we've sort of grown as a species to the point where that doorway is wider.
Now, this might not be fair, but I would love it if you would do even a short meditation for us, with us.
Okay. How short?
For listeners. Well, you don't want to go like 20 or 30 minutes because people will get lost, you know, like mm-hmm. 5 minutes or so. Can you do something like that?
Okay.
That's
sure.
Asking a lot, but.
No, I don't care. I think it's fine.
And I want to say, while I was listening to one of your interviews, by the end of it, I was absolutely expanded. I love it because I'm kind of an energy junkie anyway, but but your energy is so wonderful. And I thought, okay, well, let's give everybody a special treat.
Okay, let's do a 5 minute. Okay. And I'm going to do the one that I have. It's the first meditation, the first mind training meditation. Okay. There's actually, I think 12 meditations in the book and 2 additional practices. Wonderful. So I wanted it to be very step by step. And because I was learning as I wrote the book, I sort of made myself the guinea pig. And I wanted to tell people what I was experiencing at each step and, you know, what my stumbling blocks were and so on. So let's give ourselves 5 minutes.
Okay, wonderful.
And let's see, what time is it? Okay. And we're going to calm ourselves by closing our eyes and following our breath in and out for a count of 10. And we're now going to use our creative meditation to lift our consciousness to a focal point outside and above our heads. And we're going to see this as the lower mind, the rational mind, which is now very still. And once we get to that point, we're going to project a line of light even higher to the soul center, which is 6 inches above our head. And we see the soul center as a brilliant sun, which is a radiant source of energy. And then we're going to visualize this line of light reaching even higher toward the higher or intuitive mind. So take a moment to hold this lighted alignment between the brain, the lower mind, the soul, and the higher intuitive mind. And when we do this, we should pause for a moment and just feel the light and energy of our soul. And then, holding our minds steady in that light, we're going to meditate for 5 minutes on this thought, I am the soul. Think about this sentence and look behind it and see if you can understand the deeper meaning. So we're going to take 5 minutes to do this. Let's now come back. We're going to end the meditation by visualizing a pure white light pouring down from our souls, which will illuminate our minds, calm our emotions, and invigorate our physical body. What I have discovered is that even though this is a very subtle process, it's actually very powerful. That the daily contact with the soul really starts to shift us. And what I think is that it raises our vibration. We start to match the soul energy. And I think this speeds up our spiritual evolution. You're and again, dead. It's very subtle. But I've noticed that I look at things from a higher perspective. And in addition to the heart opening exercises that I mentioned, I've become a lot more tolerant, less judgmental, more forgiving, and that's created more joy and peace in my life. So this was a very transformational experience for me to write this book, to do these meditations, and just to follow this process along.
Oh my, well, it's very effective, very healing, isn't it? Even on a physical level.
It is. And one thing I noticed, I mean, they say in the Arcane School that full soul consciousness is a pretty advanced state. But one thing I noticed is that pretty early on, I started to feel a deepening connection to my soul. And there's a line in the Bible that if you come closer to God, God comes closer to you. And I think that's true with the soul too. When we extend our attention upward, the soul extends its attention down to us. And the bridge that we build between the human personality and the soul is a united effort between the human self and the soul. And so we have this daily contact with the
soul.
It's
like cutting a trail, isn't it, sort of thing?
That's right. Yeah. And what's very fascinating and exciting about this is that when we make this contact with the soul, we're actually taking our first steps beyond the human world and into the superhuman worlds. So we are making that step forward as a species, like Barbara Marx Hubbard says. Mm-hmm. And so we're the pioneers. We're out there, you know, like Christopher Columbus and Magellan. We're not exploring the physical world. We're exploring this new subtle world. And we're the ones who are creating this map that others can follow.
Wow. Now, I know in the Yoga Sutras way back when, they spoke a lot of doing exercises to become superhuman as well, right?
That's right.
Powers, cities, right?
Yeah. And Patanjali was actually the first person to put into book form what was taught orally in the mystery schools. Mm-hmm. And his Yoga Sutras is a classic text, and that was very much studied in the arcane school. And what he has done is he's laid out a very step-by-step process of how you first get control of the mind and your emotions, and then you start to build this bridge. And he talks about the lower psychic powers and the higher psychic powers. The emotional body really is the seat of psychic ability. And when you start to send your attention upward, that's the first doorway you're going to come to. And so you have increased psychic ability. And he says, don't get excited about it or give yourself airs about it.
Yeah.
This is just a lower stage. And that's what I found too, is that I've gotten more and more psychic. But it's really the higher kind of perception that we want. Psychic at that level is always unreliable because it's tinged with our own emotional issues. But when you learn to go through the doorway of the mind and you have the mind solid and controlled, then you have access to the universal or divine mind, mm-hmm. which has information on all subjects, past, present, and future. And that, I discovered, is the experience that we call genius. And this I'd love to talk about, too.
I'd love to talk about that. You please do.
Yeah. I kind of stumbled into it and I got very excited about it. The wisdom teachings tell us that the soul is the portal or gateway to these higher worlds, to the universal or divine mind, and that when we have contact with the soul, then we have access to this higher world. And before I started the book, I reread one of my favorite books of all time. It's Higher Creativity, written by Willis Harmon, who was once the president of the Institute of Noetic Sciences.
Uh-huh.
And I think this book came out in 1984. I lugged it around with me everywhere. I loved it. And in this book, he looks at the biographies of many artists, writers, composers, scientists, and inventors, and he discovered that their greatest achievements came through an intuitive breakthrough. So I read that book, and then I took that book to the library, and I checked out as many books from his bibliography as I could, because I wanted to see what his original sources were. Mm. And one book was especially helpful. It was called Talks with Great Composers. And it was written by a man named Arthur Bell. He was an American violinist who was living in Europe. And he wrote it in the late 1800s. It wasn't published until the 50s because he had an agreement with Brahms not to publish it until after his death. And in this book, he interviewed many composers, Puccini, Brahms, Strauss, and Wagner, about the source of their creative genius. Hmm. And I was absolutely stunned and fascinated by the consistency of their experience, because each of them were speaking about the soul as a portal to a universal source of inspiration, exactly as it's said in the wisdom teachings, that once they were connected to the source, the ideas and images simply flowed into their brains. And I have many of these stories in the book. And it became clear to me.
Einstein was like that too, wasn't he?
Absolutely. Yeah. I had composers, I had writers, I had visual artists, and I had scientists. And he's the best example. Mm-hmm. He talked very clearly about his inspiration coming from a higher source. Mm-hmm. He says that one of his quotes was, "There comes a time when the mind takes a higher plane of knowledge and that all great discoveries have involved this type of leap." So he talked about this exactly.
And I think he also talked about how once he had that, he then had to come back down and figure out what it meant in terms of, you know, explanations or formulas or whatever.
That's right. That's right. When he came into his great discovery,
E squared. Yeah.
Right. And one of his friends said that he tapped into God's thoughts and understood the higher plan for the universe. He described it as a storm broke loose in my mind, and with it came the answers.
But that's sort of like you being in the garden and getting a download.
That's right. That's
maybe a little bigger, but you know.
Yeah, and that's what happened to him. And these things are life-changing often, and they're life-changing for all of us.
And you don't have any doubts, do you?
That's right. Yeah. And the thing that's interesting is that the things that are brought from this level are considered classics, because these works of art, these compositions, stand the test of time because they come from this higher beauty.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that that's fueled, the higher beauty is from, is fueled by beings that supposedly master our species, you know, that look after us from a way beyond our consciousness?
Well, that's a good question. And I think it probably, there's two answers to that. One, again, it goes back to that idea that we all come into each incarnation with skills and abilities that we've developed. Mm-hmm. So I think some of these people had already developed that ability to make contact with the higher worlds. And I also think that the higher beings send things to us all the time, and they can send beauty. So we understand that there's more beauty in the world than what we could have come up with our human selves. And so that's why these compositions and works of art are often so incredibly exquisite, that they come from these higher levels and they're given to humanity to inspire us.
That's really interesting. So when you're doing these meditations, these beautiful meditations, which you've put in your book, we're more primed to be able to reach or to raise our minds to connect with the soul in order to reach for a lot of that as well, are we?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I had a dream when I was working on the book, and I put this in the book. Mm-hmm. I dreamt that I was working on this project, and it was some sort of book project, and it entailed filing and collating all this written material. And I was working very slowly because I was blind.
Oh.
And at a certain point in the dream, I realized that I wasn't really blind, that I could work more quickly. I just hadn't realized that I could actually see. And I woke up and I thought, wow, this is very significant, because what I had done was this very slow and laborious process of reading all this very dense esoteric material and then reading about, you know, world traditions and so on. And that we can do it that way, but it's very slow. And it's possible, if we can access the higher worlds, that we have access to everything, that all the information we need is available by intuitive means, that we don't have to go that slow route. And so I thought, well, that's very significant, that that's really a part of this, that the information is already there. We just have to pull it down. Mm-hmm. And that's what these composers talked about. And they used the same language, too, which I found fascinating. One of the words Puccini and I think it was Wagner used was appropriating, that the information is there and you appropriate it for your own individual use. You pull it down and you use it. So, you know, if I had developed those skills already, I wouldn't have had to spend years cracking the books. I could have just pulled this stuff down and wrote the book, you know, from this intuitive information. And some of it seemed to come that way, especially towards the end. And of course, I was wishing that I could speed up the process.
Of course.
But
well,
you know,
I think of Edgar Cayce, who went to sleep on his books and then learned everything.
Right. That would be nice. That would be nice. I cut my research in half, or, you know, a quarter of the time. And, you know, but it just didn't happen that way for me until towards the end.
Well, I just want to jump back into something a little bit more mundane, which is, you're talking about the levels of consciousness, or the fields that we are working our way through in order to become evolved, in order to move through our evolution, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're still, when I talk about the ferment in the world, we're still at the level en masse where we're hanging on to old ways of having been, and the old pride and control and power and mastery and all that. That's what keeps us from having that inspirational information, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it relates to the chakra system. And I found it interesting that all this stuff is interrelated, that the chakra system tells us that the first three chakras have to do with our instinctive animal nature.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the heart, which is the borderline between the material world and the spiritual world, between our physical impulses and our spiritual impulses. And that most of humanity is at the third level, the third chakra, which is about power and control and ego and so on.
And who am
and
I?
That, mm-hmm. Yeah, and the doorway really is the heart. And that's why there's so much focus on the heart. The heart is when we start to understand that we're universal and connected with everything and everyone. And when we open the heart, that's when we have the ability to start doing this higher mind training. And so I have a whole chapter on the heart and how significant it is in all different cultures and the meditations that help me open my heart.
Yeah, I loved that part. Also, when you were talking about the Book of Revelations, That's one of my, this is without studying like you have. I just am talking a lot when people say, what's happening? I'm going, it's the Book of Revelations. We're just having all kinds of stuff revealed right now. That's how I interpret it, you know. But I enjoyed how you were talking about it. So would you talk a bit about that?
Sure. And this is something that I didn't know anything about. And I just sort of stumbled over it again and was very excited. Many people say that the seven seals, which are supposed to be, you know, these horrible things that happen one after the other, mm-hmm. really are symbolically the seven chakras.
Waking up, right?
Right. What's mm-hmm. it showing? It's showing us is that we have these different stages, and that when we come to the seventh seal, that's sort of the end of our evolutionary journey. And we make that connection between heaven and earth. So it's not some sort of apocalyptic horror that awaits us. It's our awakening. And we're up to that sort of fourth seal or that fourth chakra now.
I also like the way you described, and I really enjoyed this part where you described that the effectiveness of the, I think it was the second chakra, where you're talking about how it has a huge impact on the throat. And I always think of the throat as how we're expressing our own evolution in, mm-hmm. in many ways. So would you talk a bit about that? Because you're right, it's the seven seals, but you were writing about how they flow from one to the other in a kind of an evolutionary style, right?
That's right. That's right. It's said that the second chakra is connected to the throat chakra. And when we start to evolve and start to express ourselves in a higher way, then the energy moves from that second chakra, which is sort of creative in the way that reproduction is created. And it starts to move to that higher creativity. And I have my own personal theory, which is not based on anything scientific, that so many women have thyroid issues. I have thyroid issues.
I have, and, too.
Yeah, and almost everybody I know has thyroid issues. And I think it's related to that energy sort of moving up to that area, that's when we express our higher creativity. And if that's not balanced and it takes a while to balance it out, then it starts to affect the organs that are connected to that particular center. And I personally think that that's an underlying factor of why so many of us have thyroid issues. Mm-hmm. And it always comes at a certain time in our lives, you know, when where our childbearing years are over and we're starting to express that higher creativity.
Yeah, or else when people have huge losses and then that engorges the throat, right?
Yeah, that makes sense, too. That makes sense, too.
It's very interesting. But I really love the way you described the seven seals, the chakras. It's wonderful.
Yeah. And one other significant thing is about how we pull the energy up from the solar plexus to the heart.
Okay.
And the Buddha talked about this too. He talked about the virtues of the heart and said that loving kindness is the most important. And when we start to act more in service, when we start to really develop our meditation process and open our heart, that's when the energy starts to pull from the solar plexus into the heart center. And that's when the heart center starts to open. So these practices are really important.
I love that. Yeah, because everybody's talking these days about how everything has to be about love, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so when you talk about personal power, then moving to love, I think that's really amazing. Huh?
Yeah, it is. So we're living in an incredible time. Living in a time when we're taking that step beyond the human world into this superhuman world, and we're starting to open these higher faculties and these higher chakras, which allow us to do this kind of training. So we're sort of right on the verge of a new world. And
so what is it going to look like?
We're in the pioneers. Well, you know, I thought about writing a novel, a time travel novel, about what would happen when we make this shift. And I decided not to because there wasn't enough tension in it because my sense of the world when we have open hearts and we understand our interconnection is so different and so wonderful that, you know, there really wasn't enough creative tension for a novel. But I think that that's when we start to really understand this concept of brotherhood, that we're all interconnected. And war does seem absolutely ridiculous in that context. It's like warring against ourselves, chopping off our hands, or warring against our, you know, beloved siblings, or it just doesn't compute. And so we're being pushed into that by all the problems that we have in the world. And I noticed in my own life, when I have a crisis, I tend to go within and try to sort things out. Mm-hmm. So collectively, as a species, our backs are against the wall. And we have one direction we can move in only, and that's forward.
I think you're right, because we're fighting over resources, aren't we? And
we're
killing for peace.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I guess my question about all of that is like, I guess I always pray that if we really work on opening our hearts and we really pass it on and we are the 100th monkey and all of that, the world, the reality that we experience, even if many people will fight to the finish to hang on to what they think of as security, it won't touch us after a while, I think. Is that right? That's how I feel anyway.
Say that again. I don't really understand.
Well, if many, many people are working to open their hearts and to understand each other and so on, and there are people who want to fight to the finish, they want to kill, they want to hang on to security the way it was, they want to rip off the resources, right? And mm-hmm. they don't want to let go of their hands, right? They don't want to let go of their clutch. Mm-hmm. And I keep feeling like you just won't be participating in that world after a while. You just have to keep going, keep opening your heart, keep going, keep sharing.
I understand what you said now, but I think that more and more of us doing that creates an energetic pool that helps those people. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, some of those people just are not going to make it in this lifetime. And that's something that they'll work on in the future.
I think that's true. Yeah. It's a very interesting book anyway. And I had another question about spiritual telepathy. You're saying basically one thing that I'm being cheeky about is that you're kind of ratcheting up what each of these words mean, like spiritual, like telepathy, like raising it to a higher level all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Telepathy is something that, for example, if we get, this is what I think I read anyway, if we become open-hearted and so on, we are radiating it out, and we're also able to engage in understanding what other people are radiating out and send back messages, are we not?
Mm-hmm.
For the highest good.
Right, right. And what was so fascinating to me as when I studied this was that it does show the progression of our perceptual abilities from body, mind to spirit, that, you know, like the cavemen, we're instinctive and we still have that. And now we're focusing on rational knowing. And then our next doorway is the spiritual. And it's interesting that when we develop the next higher type of knowing, the old way doesn't disappear. It just falls below the threshold of our conscious awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So we still have that instinctive kind of telepathy happening. And I think one of the things we did in the 90s was to tell people that they could pay attention to this, that they could honor that, that there is another nonverbal way. And it was denigrated during the rise of the scientific worldview. It was considered superstitious and the old way and women's intuition and blah, blah. But we help people to understand that this is a really valid way of knowing, and we're getting important information about this.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I thought was very interesting is watching how this sort of filters down into the culture. I think in the past, no prominent person would have ever admitted to coming to a decision by anything other than rational means.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had all these politicians talking about their gut feelings. You know, George Bush talks about how he's a gut player, and his Homeland Security person, Michael Chertoff, talked about how he had a gut feeling that we were going to be attacked one summer. So they're talking about this, you know, in a way that nobody did in the past. It was really just this sort of silly woman's thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it does filter down into the culture. And so we do have this sort of gut knowing that if we don't pay attention to it, we can get ourselves in a lot of trouble. I mean, we have people that look good on paper. We have opportunities that look good on paper, but our gut's going crazy and telling us, no, there's something wrong here. Mm-hmm. And if we don't pay attention to that, then, you know, we regret it.
So activism is an inside job.
You're right.
Well, Colleen, this has just been delightful for me. And I think our listeners probably gained a lot, including that wonderful gift of meditation that you shared with us in the middle of this discussion. And your book is Spiritual Telepathy. And I really, I haven't done it justice because some of the profound levels of consciousness that you reveal there and all the studies that you've done are just, it's a wonderful reference book for people to have. It's very inspiring reference. Thank you.
Yeah. There's people can come to my website and read the introduction.
Good.
It's spiritualtelepathy.net. And there's several links throughout the website that will allow them to get to Amazon and order the book.
Good stuff. And do you do workshops or that sort of thing?
I'm starting to do that. Yeah, I did one in California in January, and I just got an offer to do one in France. So that's going to be a 3-day event that I'm working on now. So I'll be doing more of that in the future.
And we can find that out on your website as well.
That's right.
Then say that again,
spiritualtelepathy.net.
Perfect. Thank you so much for being a paradigm shifter, or at least explaining all the paradigms that we're shifting, too.
Well, I really enjoyed talking to you. Thank you.
Wonderful work. Thanks, Colleen.